Okay, we're going to start here on the bottom of Nun Zayin Amud Bet. We're continuing with the sugya that we left off with yesterday, which is, how do we determine if a behema is a trefa? So the Gemara is going to take a sidebar now and then come back to that discussion. Discussion now relates to eggs born by a trefa. That is Amar Mehmar. Hane be'e de trefa, the eggs of a chicken that is a trefa. Shichla kama asira, the first clutch that is created is asira. Mikan ve'elech, from there on, havalei zev is a goreim u'mutar. There are multiple factors, multiple gormim here, and it's mutar. The assumption being that when it comes to the first clutch that is there, they are at the time when the chicken became or the animal became a trefa. Since they are at that time present already, they are already being created inside of the chicken. If the chicken's a trefa, that tarfut, or that trefut, affects the eggs that are there. Mikan ve'elech, from that point forward, there are two contributors to the eggs. There is the zachar and the nekeva. And since the nekeva is a trefa, but not the zachar, therefore we have an instance of zev zeh goreim is mutar, and we don't worry about the eggs that are produced after that point in time. Now, eight ve'ravashli ameimar vishavin, Bebeitzat, trefa, shasura, mipnei shekadma b'isur. They both agree that when it comes to an egg of a trefa, that it's asur, because it was brought up, produced in an atmosphere of isur, because of the trefa that was there. And the word that we're using here as gadla seems to be something that is continuous. Any egg that is created, any egg that is produced by this chicken is asur, because that chicken is a trefa. So when it says, hotam bedesafno me'aro, over there that we're talking about that the egg came about because of parthenogenesis, which is that the female is able to self-stimulate through the dust and create or produce the eggs that are necessary without any need or necessity for a male. So if you involve a male in the process of creating the eggs, then you have a zeh v'zeh goreim, and it'll be mutar. On the other hand, if there's no male involved in the process of producing the eggs or creating the eggs, then you simply have the trefa, this chicken that's a trefa producing the eggs, and that'll be problematic. So v'lishlene, why don't we explain this mishnah that says v'shavim v'bitzat trefa shasura v'pnei shekadma b'isur? Why don't we lishlene b'shichla kama? Why don't we answer up that that was with the first clutch? So imkain, the problem with it is the lashon, which I pointed out before, which is it says gadla. Gadla seems to mean that as long as it's producing or productive with eggs, they're all problematic. If you are right, it should be gamra. It finished. When it finished, produced his egg, mi ba'ile. So if it was just the first clutch, this mishnah should have read, v'shavim beitzat trefa she'asura mipnei she'gamra b'isur. Because they were finished b'isur, meaning that there was a section or a number of eggs that were problematic, and after that point they will not be problematic because they have the zev zeh goreim masur. The fact that the Mishnah uses the term gadla seems to be that this is an ongoing problem. It's an ongoing problem. The answer can't be it was the first clutch, but rather all eggs are problematic. All eggs are problematic when you do not involve a male, but you simply involve the female in the production of the eggs. Ela ha ditnan. So now what are you going to do with this Mishnah? Vlad trefa. We have an animal that is born to a trefa. Rabbi Elazar omer lo yikrav legabei mizbeach. You cannot put a trefa onto the mizbeach. Rabbi Shu omer yikrav, permissible to put it on the mizbeach. So you see a couple things from here. One is that a trefa can give birth, because the fact is that you have a vlad trefa over here. The fact that a trefa can give birth, and once it's given birth, what is the status of the animal that's born? Is it something that is ru'uya l'mizbeach, or is it something that's not ru'uya l'mizbeach? But my commitment, what is their argument about? Bishin nitrefa ulusof ibra. It's a case where first the trefa happened, and then afterwards became impregnated. Rabbi Elazar sevar zevzeh goreim asur. Elazar believes that zevzeh goreim is asur because you have the contribution of the female, which is a trefa, the male, which is not a trefa, that creates the fetus, and then the subsequent animal that's born, the vlad that's born, and that is asur, because that's zeh v'zeh goreim asur, and therefore you can't place it on the mizbeach. Yeshua savar zeh v'zeh goreim mutar. He says no. But now that you involve a male that is not a trefa, along with the female that is a trefa, I have a zeh v'zeh goreim case. The output or the production of those two animals will be considered mutar or heter. So therefore, the fetus and then the subsequent vlad that is born will be Ra'ui the Mizbeach. It doesn't have any classification of a Treifah. It doesn't have a classification of Isur. The Gemara says, if you're right, Ihochi, Admiflege the Gvoa, Liflegula Hejot. The problem here is not simply a problem of whether this is Ra'ui the Mizbeach or not Ra'ui the Mizbeach. This is a question of whether this animal is Mutar or Asur. Do we view the animal as an extension of the mother and its Asur? Asur would be both for the Mizbeach as well as for consumption by lay people. And if you say it's mutar the mizbech, of course it's certainly mutar for lay people then to consume it. So why is the Mishnah over here limiting their machloket, or the Braita really, limiting their machloket to an issue that revolves around bodshim, when their machloket really extends even to chulin? So where it says, well, they want to tell you, tell you the power of Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua is even willing to be matir the gabe kodashim. Kodashim, where we usually have a stricter determination for allowing it on the Mizbeach, even here, he allows it on the Mizbeach. So when it says, okay, so when the Afilu Gvoa Namishori, he allows it on the Mizbeach, lift the gold ahead, Yod. Let us say the Machlokas is in the Chulin, Lodicha Kocho de Rabbi Lezer. Tell you the power of Rabbi Lezer, he says it's even Asur for Hejot. The Afilu Hejot Nami Asur. My answer is, like we see in many places in Shas, Koach de Hetera Odifle. It rather teach you the circumstance in which we find the Heter. Circumstance of the Heter is in Kodashim. The Chiddush is that Rabbi Lezer is even willing to be Matir the Gabe Kodashim. Since that's the bigger Chiddush Litzad Heter, therefore, we brought the Machloket in the realm of Kodashim. Umodim, Bebeitza Treifa, they both agree when it comes to a Beitza Treifa Shasura, that is problematic. Bedesafno Me'ara, because there it's where it was self-stimulated, where it was done through parthenogenesis, and therefore, it's the chad gorim hu. There's only one contributor. If it's one contributor, the only contributor here is the female who is a treifa, and therefore it is asura. That's the way we'll learn it. And just going back to the first statement, as we began the Gemara with Shavin, that they both agree, bebeitza treifa shasura bipnei shegadla bisur. So that, Rashi claims, is Rabbi Eliezer vidarabonon, de pligi bevlad behema treifa. He says that Braita that we just brought down, this machlokas between Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua, where they disagree with regards to a Vlad Treifa, they both agree when it comes to a Beitza, which was what we saw that summary statement at the end of the Braita here, that statement that says that even though they argue by Vlad Treifa, they agree by a Beitza Treifa. And that's what that Shavin by Beitza Treifa did in the beginning, was that conclusion. Shavin here means both Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua, both Rabbi Lezer and the Chachamim agree to that. That's the way Rashi learns it. Tosafot says that it has reference to a machloka between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, that is a Mishnah, an explicit Mishnah in Ediot. So according to Tosafot says that this doesn't relate to the machlokas Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Shua, but rather it's an explicit machloka Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai in the Mishnah in Ediot. And over there they are arguing about eggs that come out of a nevela. Eggs that come out of a nevela, what is the status of those eggs? If you can find similar eggs sold in the marketplace, that means that these eggs were fully done before the animal became a nevela, and they're kasher, they're separate from the animal, whereas Beit Hillel says they're asurim all the way along. And then it says v'shavin, they both agree, b'beitzat treifa shasura, that everybody agrees by beitzat treifa, that it's problematic, m'neshe gadla b'isur, because then the whole creation or production of the egg was done b'isur, as opposed to nevela, which is something that happened after the fact. So that's what Tosafot says it's referencing over here. The interesting thing, Beit Hillel in the Mishnah Idiot says that when it comes to a nevela, you cannot eat the egg. Even if it's a finished egg, a completely finished egg, if you find a finished egg inside of a nevela, it goes along with the basar of the nevela and has a dinner of a nevela and you can't consume the egg. Yet, we find in the Gemara in Beitza that Beit Hillel agrees that when it comes to Yom Tov and so on and so forth, if you find a finished egg inside of the chicken, that it's mutar to eat even with milk, because they are not considered like the basar of the chicken. So it seems to me there's a steer in the position of Beit Hillel. Beit Hillel says in one place, the eggs are parvil, they're not a problem of basar, and therefore you can eat them with milk. In the other place, if they're caught up in a nevela, they have a din like a nevela, and they become like basar nevela. So how do you distinguish between the two? So Tosafot brings here something that we also saw in Avodah Zarah, this distinction in Isur, which is, v'teretz balachot gedolot, Degabe Yisur Nevela Doraita Hechmiru. When it comes to the Yisur Doraita of Nevela, they were Machmir. Of Al Basar Uf Bechalav, they're Rabbanan Ekilu. But when it comes to Basar Bechalav is a Din Doraita when it comes to Basar Behema. But when it comes to Basar Uf, it's only a Din de Rabbanan. Verabeno Tam Teritz, and this is the answer that we saw in Avodah Zarah. Comes a nevela, and nevela is a dover hasur. So therefore, hechmiru hachamim. They were machmir in that case. Aval, when it comes to basar of bechalav, davi heter dechochad bechad vapi nafsha shari. When it comes to chicken and milk together, each one independently is mutar. The chicken is mutar, the milk is mutar. It's only when they're brought together that they become isur. So since each one in a standalone state is mutar, therefore we're not machmir in that case for worrying about these eggs that are coming out of the chicken. So Rav Tam makes that distinction that basar bechalav is different than other isurim. Other isurim are inherently asur, whereas basar bechalav is really made up or created through two divarim, two things that are mutarim, that are okay. So over here too, since they are created of two things that are mutarim, we're going to be much more makil when it comes to basar bechalav of basar ha'of, when we're talking about the eggs that come out of it, than we would be by the eggs that come out of the nevela, where we're talking about isur, inherent isur of the nevela itself. So that's the answer that Tosfos gives. It comes up, the question comes up, because he interprets the word shavin here to refer to a machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai in Ediot. And while he's on that topic, he points out this interesting issue that comes up in Shitat Beit Hillel and answers it, bringing the answer of the Halachot Gedolot as well as the Rabbeinu Tam. So now, the Gemara says, Rav Acha sover lo ke Rav Acha ba Yaakov. Rav Acha holds like Rav Acha ba Yaakov. Umat in the main market Damran. He holds like Rav Acha ba Yaakov. What's Rav Acha ba Yaakov? Rav Acha ba Yaakov is on the last line of yesterday's daf. Which is Amar Rav Acha ba Yaakov halacha treifa yoled to mishabechet. He believes that a treifa can give birth. So since a treifa can give birth, therefore he lays out the whole sugya that we just saw in a maimar the way that we just read it. That the issue is that it was nitrifa ulusof ibra. The case of the Vlad Trefa here is a case where it was in, first became a Trefa, and then subsequent to that, it was impregnated. And because of that, it becomes a problem of Zev Zeh Goreim, Asur Zev Zeh Goreim Mutar. But that's all premised on the fact that a Trefa can give birth. And that's what it means. Rav Acha holds like Rav Acha B'Yaakov that a Trefa can give birth. And therefore, they explained the Amemer in this way. On the other hand, and Shaul, this is what you were asking before, Ravina lo sabra like Rav Acha B'Yaakov. Ravina doesn't hold like Rav Acha B'Yaakov. He thinks that a treifa cannot give birth. Well, if a treifa can't give birth, he can no longer explain a Maimar's or the whole sequence of the Gemara like we just did. And that's why we're going to have a different reading of a Maimar. Ma'ale le Maimar b'hai lishno. And therefore he explains a Maimar in this Lashon, which is, Amar Maimar, hani bei the suffix treifa, eggs of a treifa. We have a suffix about this treifa. Obviously, if it's a vade treifa, according to this opinion, then the eggs are going to be asurim. Because there is no way that this animal can produce and be create a vlad after it becomes a treifa. And therefore, the only way for these eggs to come out after that point in time, it would be to be safna ba'ara, or we would expect it not to have eggs. So the issue here is that we're talking about a suffix treifa rather than a vada treifa. So a suffix treifa, the shichlo kama mishayin and lehu. We take the first clutch that comes out, and we wait. Ihadro vitano, if she then can carry more eggs, then, sharyan, we allow you to eat the first clutch as well. Because if the fact that it can produce more eggs is an indication that it's not a treifa. Treifa doesn't give birth. Treifot don't produce eggs. So if it does produce an egg, it's evidence that this is not a treifa. If it's not a treifa, then you can eat the first clutch that came out. Vilo, if we don't see it produce any more eggs, then asiran. We don't allow you to eat the first clutch, because we assume that the fact that this chicken was a treifa. That's what we're dealing here with, a suffix treifa. And you hold out the first clutch till you know whether it's a vada treifa. So etave ravashi der meimar, similar to what we saw above, ravashi now challenges a meimar, umodim bebeitzat treifa, shasura mipneshi gadla bisur. Quotes the same idea that we had before, that modim bebeitzat treifa, shasura mipneshi gadla bisur. Amarle, hotum bedishich lakamo. So that's talking about the first clutch. So here we're talking about a beitzat treifa, shasura. They are a surah, shagadla bisur, because they grew up bisur. Well, how does it grow up bisur? Eggs only grow up in Isur if the chicken is already a treifa. And when it is a treifa, then it produces eggs. Well, according to you, a treifa can't produce eggs. So where is this situation? What's the circumstance? His answer is, b'shich l'kamo. It's talking about the first clutch. The first clutch happened, the eggs are already in production, and then the chicken became a treifa. Therefore, the eggs inside are there because they were already in production prior to it becoming a treifa. But after the shich l'kamo, there's nothing to speak about. There's no way. It can't have any more eggs after the shichla kama, because there will be no more eggs. So now we're going to run into a problem. We said above that you can't say shichla kama. The Gemara asked, why didn't they answer that way? The Gemara rejected it because of lashon of gadla. Well, lashon of gadla means something that's continuous or happens on a recurring basis. Whereas garma should be the lashon that's used if you're talking about a single clutch. So When it says Imkein Gada Gamra Mibayle, why are you using Lashon Gada instead of the Lashon Gamra? So the Gemara says today Gamra to solve that problem. They say change it, redact that Mishnah to the fact that it reads that Gamra, and therefore it's only referencing the first Shechla, the first clutch. Elahadetnan. Or again, the Tanya, we have the bright of Lajri for Rabbi Lezo, Omer lo yikrav, lo gam yizvech, Rabbi Shua, Omer yikrav, Micah Miflege. What are they arguing about? Kishi Ibra ulusof nitruva. It has to be a case where they were first impregnated, and then afterwards became a trefa. The way we explained it before is impossible now. The way we explained this machlok before was that it first became a trefa, and then became impregnated. But this is according to Shita Ravino, who says that once you're a trefa, you do not become impregnated. You cannot carry a fetus at that point in time. So therefore, the case on the machloket here in the Mishnah must be about a case, Ibra, that it was first impregnated, Utsof Nivjifa only became a trefa after it was already impregnated. So now, what is the basis of the machlokas? Rav Elazar says, Ubar Yerachimo. Rav Elazar believes that an Ubar, a fetus, is the extension of its mother. Since it's an extension of its mother, when the mother became a trefa, so did the fetus. Rav Yeshua says, Ubar Lav Yerachimo. Shua says, no, they're separate entities. There's the mother and the fetus. The fetus is an independent entity. Just because the mother became a trefa does not mean that the fetus became a trefa. Ihachi. So now I have the same question. Adamiflike, the Gavoa, why are they arguing Kodashim? Liflegula Hejot. Let them argue even in Chulin for a Hejot. The question whether it's Mutar or Asur is equally applicable for lay people to eat it or consume it as it is for it to go on the Mizveach. When it says, Oh, Gidiocha Kochod Rabbi Shua, to teach you the power of Rabbi Shua that he's Matar even the Gabi Mizveach. When it says, Liflegula Hejot, let them argue in Chulin, Odiocha Kochod Rabbi Lezer, to teach the power of Rabbi Lezer that he's Oser in that case. When it says, Korach de deria edifle, they much prefer to focus on the Hetera side because the one who is Matir, as Rashi says in the Gemara and Beitza and other places, when he says, Korach de deria edif, anybody can be Machmir. It doesn't take any strength in learning or any knowledge to be Machmir. It takes knowledge, courage, and real understanding to be Matir. And therefore we always say, Korach de deria edifle. Umodim, vadai bebeitzai trefa shasura bedeshichla kamo. So the answer in the end of the modeh that they agree by the eggs is talking about by a vadai beitza. By a vadai beitza of a trefa, they agree that it's a surah. We're talking about the first clutch, because that's the only clutch this animal is going to have. And therefore, my taima, why do we say this? Because gufahi, it's a part and parcel of its guf. So even Rabbi Yeshua, who says that ubar is a love area chimo that has independent life beyond the animal itself, and you would not consider or classify them in the same category. Nevertheless, when it comes to eggs, he will say that the eggs are really part and parcel of the chicken. You cannot separate them out and consider them to be a separate entity. And because of that, then the animal is a trefa. It will also make the eggs into a trefa. So what you see from here is that we have two readings of a Meimar statement. One reading of a Meimar statement, according to Rav Acha ben Yaakov, says that you can give birth, the trefa can give birth. And another reading, according to a Meimer, based on Ravina, who says the halacha is not like Rav Acha ben Yaakov, that a trefa cannot reproduce, a trefa cannot be impregnated, and therefore they have to reread the whole statement of a Meimer according to that tzad in trefa. Now, the hilchata, what's the halacha? Bezachar. When it comes to a male animal, kol shnei masar chodesh, the threshold or the test to know whether it's a trefa or not is whether it crosses the 12-month mark. If it lives more than 12 months, it's not a trefa. Less than 12 months, then it's very possibly a trefa, and it would be a surah. Benikva, kosheinu yoledet. Benikva, the test is if it doesn't give birth. If it doesn't reproduce, if it doesn't become impregnated, then we know that it's a trefa. That'll be the test by the female. Right. So Tosafot asked your question yesterday. Very good question. Wait, just because it doesn't give birth doesn't mean it's a trefa. You have animals that get old, and they don't give birth either. So Tosafot asked your question yesterday, and he says, really, it's the opposite is true. If it gives birth, we know for certain that it's not a trefa. Right? Only if it doesn't give birth, then we have to be choshesh that it is a trefa. So the evidence only be if it does give birth. Right. So your question's a valid question. Tosafot asked that yesterday, and he said that the only evidence is if it does give birth. When it doesn't give birth, like you're saying, that's not evidence it's a trefa. It's just the fact is that we can't prove that it's not a trefa. All right. So now we have the statement, Amar Rav Huna, Kobirya Sh'ein Bo Etzim. Any living being or creature that does not have a bone in it, doesn't live 12 months. Now what he's referring to here, when he says it doesn't have a bone in it, is likely he's referring to invertebrate. Any invertebrate does not live more than 12 months. So what does that mean? What's the nafkamina from that? So that's the next statement in the Gemara. Amar Rav Papa, Shema Mina, Amid Rav Huna. What we can conclude from Rav Huna is, Hadamar Shmuel, This statement by Shmuel, Kishot Shitlia Beyasura, cucumbers that become infested with worms while it's still attached to the ground, meaning Be'ibay in its normal growth place where it's growing, then they are problematic. This goes back to a discussion that we had, the Gabei Shvatzim. When it comes to Shvatzim, the only Shvatzim that are Surim are Shvatzim HaShoreitz Ala Aretz, Shvatzim that creep and crawl on the land. They are Surim. Aval Shvatzim that come out of the vegetables themselves, out of the fruit themselves, again, this seems to be premised on the condition of spontaneous generation, the idea that create these types of worms, bugs, or maggots can come out of the fruit themselves, out of the meat themselves, not from the ground. And based on that, you'll have two different types of shvatzim. Shvatzim that crawl on the ground. If they've crawled on the ground, then they are asurim, and they'll create a problem for you. So if they enter from the outside, then you'll be asurim. On the other hand, if these shvatzim never crawled on the ground, and they emerged from this cucumber, they emerged from this basar, they emerged from this cheese. In all those cases, they'll be mutarim to eat because they are not considered to be a sheretz, al aretz. Here we have an exceptional case, which is that the cucumber is still attached. So since the cucumber is still attached to the vine, then the worms that are found inside of it are really a sheretz al aretz because it's mechuber lekarka. Since it's mechuber lekarka, when they crawl inside of the cucumber, it's equivalent of they're crawling al aretz, and therefore it'll be problematic. Then we have Hanai Tamre Dikado. These dates that were found in a kad, in a pitcher of some sort, a barrel of some sort, the Vata Tresar Yarcheshata, after 12 months, Sharyan, they are totally mutarim. Now these Tamre that are found in the kad are rotted. They have worms emerging from them. We are uncertain as to when those worms entered into these dates. Did these worms enter these dates while they were still on the tree? If that's the case, then they are sheretz or sheretz al aretz. If that's the case, they are asurim. On the other hand, if these worms only emerged after it was picked, the date, after the date was already severed from the tree, then they are not sheretz or sheretz al aretz because they were sheretz from the fruit itself. Well, how do I know? How can I tell which one it is? Here I have these worms that are there. I have no way to determine. So Rav Papa says, from Rav Huna's statement, I have a way to determine. Wait 12 months. You wait 12 months. Anything that possibly could have been in this date while it was still attached is now dead. Any worm that's coming out now, any sheretz that's coming out of this date now, was created after it was picked, because they only live for 12 months. And if that's the case, you can eat them. You can eat these shvatzim along with the date, because they are not classified as a sheretz, a sheretz al aretz. So this is Rav Papa utilizing the position of Rav Huna to teach us a din le'alocha. Right now, Gemara moves on to another thing. Amar Rav, it's just a continuation really of Rav Huna's statement that invertebrate don't live for more than 12 months. We have Amar Rav, late baka bar yoma. There is no baka, as Rashi describes, as something that bites. It's a type of insect that bites or stings like the wasp. So the translation that I said was a gnat, so that there's no gnat that lives more than a day. I mean that they don't live more than 24 hours. The late didvo, and there is no fly batshata that lives for a year. We don't have flies that live for a year. We don't have gnats that live for a day. Isn't there a common saying? There's a colloquial saying that shave shani for 7 years imra bakto, the she gnat, the female gnat, quarreled bibako with her husband, the he gnat. Damrle, she was upset at him. The chazite the bar mechuza, he saw one of these nice juicy humans coming out to the sacha b'maya that was bathing in the water, was taking a bath. The salik v'ichrach v'sadinin, he went and hid inside of his clothing. Itivele, once he put on the clothing, the gnat was now present on the body. Umatzatmine, and he drew blood from him. He sucked out his blood. Velo adatli, and you never told me about it. His wife was upset that he had had such a juicy encounter with this human being. They're talking about Bnei Bechuza because the Gemara in other places tells us the Bnei Bechuza mufunakim, unagim, they were spoiled. They were particular and they were probably juicy. And therefore, when they came out of the bathhouse, this gnat went ahead and got a nice bite, a nice dinner out of it. And his wife's all upset that he didn't tell her about it. But what do you see? Shave shani. That was for 7 years. She was chewing his ear off for this problem. Well, how could they live 7 years if, according to Rab, they only live for a day? When I says, according to you, Hadam Reinche, another saying that people have, another common saying that they have is, Shitin Mane Parzala Talule Labaka Be Kurnese. That there are 60 mane worth, that's a lot, right? Mana is 100 zuz, 60 mane worth of iron that is in the mouth of the, or they placed in the mouth of the gnat, the mouth being the Kurnese, which is the proboscis. Of the proboscis of the gnat, which is similar to what butterflies have and others have in order to extract whatever they want to eat. That proboscis weighs 60 mane worth of iron. Miika, is there such a thing? Iu gufe kamahavi. The gnat itself, how much does it weigh? Right? Ella, bemani didhu. It must be that it's on a relative basis, that it's on a proportional basis. We're talking about in the mane of gnats. In the mane of gnats, it weighs 60 mane. I mean, even though their mane are obviously a lot smaller, proportional to the human mane, and since their mane are a lot smaller, when we're talking about it's 60 mane, we're talking about 60 gnat mane. And so if that's the case, also over here, we'll say the same thing. Hachanami b'shani didhu. When it says 7 years that she chewed his ear off, that was in 7 gnat years. It wasn't in 7 human years, but rather in 7 gnat years. And 7 gnat years, we can only imagine that they don't go very long because they live for all of 24 hours. So 7 years within that 24-hour period, whatever that covers, that's what they were talking about. All right, it's not Hatum. We have a Mishnah in Bechorot. Behema balat heiriglaim. Behema balat heiriglaim. Osh en la elishalosh. An animal that has 5 legs, or only 3, her zem mum. This is classified as a mum. Amar Rav Huna, lo shanu ela shechiser v'yeter biyad. That's only true if there's an extra 4 leg, or it's missing one of the 4 legs. Aval chaser v'yeter biregel. If it's in the hind legs that he's missing, or he has an extra one, then it's a treifa na mehavya. It's not only is it a mum that it can't go on the mizbeach, it's also a treifa that it cannot be eaten by lay people. And this is based on the sugya that we saw before, that have a shmutad yerach bebehema. It's the equivalent of the dislocated femur or hip bone of the animals that we said before is a treifa. So premised on that, you would say here too, that if it's missing a leg, or if it has an extra leg, then it's also a treifa. Because, my taima, why is that true? I understand when it's missing a leg, a hind leg, that it's a problem just like the problem of shmutad yerach. But it has an extra hind leg, why is that a problem? And that's based on the principle, kol yeter kenotul dami. Anything that acts extra, it's as if it's taken away. It's as if it doesn't exist. So when you have an extra limb of sorts, we look at it as if it's removed completely, means the equivalent of being chaser. So hai chiyuta, dahavale tarte sanyo dibe. We have this animal, they found this animal after they had opened it up and checked it, that had 2 sanya dibe. Sanya Dibe is a term we actually bumped into back on Daf Nun Amud Bet, and that was one of the explanations for what the Keres HaPnimi was, the inner rumen. What was the explanation? We saw multiple explanations for the inner rumen. One of his explanations over there that it was the Sanya Dibe. Sanya Dibe, as we mentioned over there, was the Sikum, or the Sika. That is this extra pouch that sits off of the intestines before they reach the bowels. It's completely unnecessary. It's a part of the intestines that even the wolves don't want to eat because there's a lot of waste and perish that goes in there, and it's an awful smelling and awful location within the animal, so nobody would eat it. So that's what we're talking about. He has 2 of these off of his intestines. Atiru the Ravino, they brought it to Ravino, but Tarfo made the Ravuna. He was made it into treifa because of Ravuna's statement that kol kiyater kenotul dami. If you have something that's extra, it's as if it doesn't exist. Vishavkon hadadi. If they both are adjacent to each other and they pour one into the other, that is fine, because then we consider them as one. Since they're considered to be one, we don't consider it to be kiyet or kenotul dami. The extra one is as if it's gone. So hay gufta, to have enough kimi may kase leho velilo. So you have here a tube that was going out of the reticulum in the animal into the, that's the beta kosot, leho velilo, into the abomasum. So this is what we have in the animal. We have it going from the reticulum into the abomasum. Normally, in the digestive process, it goes from the beta kosot to the reticulum into the Hemses, which is the Omasim, and then from the Omasim it moves into the Keba, which is the Abomasim. Over here, instead, he has a pipe, this analyzes its extra pipe, that moves from the Beta Kosoda reticulum straight into the Abomasim. So they wanted to know, is that a trefa or not a trefa? So he has this, they brought it into Ravashi, but Savar Ravashi the Mitrafo, he wanted to make it into a trefa. Amar Lei Rav Huna Mar Bar Chia the Ravashi, Kohani Chivei Brayata Hachi Itluhu. This is a statement we saw also earlier in the Masechta, that all these, either it means grazing animals that go out to the fields to graze, all these wild animals, the animals living on the open space, they all have this tube that runs directly from the Beta Kosot to the Abomasim, from the Beta Kosot to the Keba. It seems to almost circumvent the Hemses. So this is not a trefa, this is something that's very common in the animals. How gufta davim abram ibekase the karso. There was this pipe that was found from the Beikase, again, the Beikosot is the reticulum, the Karso to the Keres. The Keres is the rumen. This is interesting because the normal digestive process involves going from the, what the cow swallowed into the rumen, and then from the rumen into the omasum. So over here, we're talking about from the rumen into the Beta Kosot, to the reticulum. So here you have a pipe that's going from the reticulum back into the keres, into the rumen. So it's an area that is already attached, but it's just moving the other direction. Normally it's moving from the keres, the rumen, into the Beta Kosot. Now he has a pipe that seems to be draining the Beta Kosot back into the rumen. After Ravashi is running in the last instance where he wanted to make it a trefa and he got told off, so over here he decided, all right, I'll get it right this time, and I'll say it's a kshera. Do we weave all weaves in one way? And again, Rashi is a very nice Rashi over here about it, like a weave or a tapestry. He says that when they use this term of mechita, is the tikun davar karlo inshi ariga. When you put something together and you make something work, it's called weaving. Shmesader et dvarav, because you make your order out of your ideas or what you want to say. And that order is like weaving, which makes a beautiful picture, even though it's pretty messy on the other end, on the backside. So how could you say this? Heichid yitmar yitmar. Where we're told that the pipe is considered to be not a trefa, not considered to be problematic, then that's it. Heichid lo yitmar. If we don't have any statement about it, lo yitmar. You can't extrapolate the fact that a pipe from the Beta Kosot to the Keba is okay. It means that also a pipe from the Beta Kosot to the Keres, to the rumen, is okay. So heid natan bar shila rav tabachai el tzipori. So I have edut from Natan bar Shila, the head butcher in Tzipori lifnei Rabbi. Ashnei bnei ma'ayim ayotzim mine behema keachad shei trefa. If you have two innards or intestines that are coming out of the animal at one point at the same time, so that's a trefa. Uchanegdam ba'ov kshira. Whereas it happens in a bird, then it's a kshira. So b'med v'amurim, where is that true? Sheyotzim b'shnei mekomot. That's only if they exit in two locations. They exit in the same location, and they rejoin within an etzpa, kshira, then it's not a problem. So over here we're talking about a case, at least according to Rashi. The case that we're talking about here is the abomasum, the keba, which is the last part of the digestive tract before it hits the intestines. So the question at hand here is, if there are two pipes, two intestines that are exiting the abomasum. So when we have the keba, the abomasum, if they're exiting from the same location, they get back together within an etzpa, it's not a problem. Problem arises if they exit the abomasum in different locations. One of them at the end of the abomasum, one of them in the middle. So now you have two intestines that are exiting from the keba. So we had a testimony from the Rav Natan bar Shila, the head butcher in Tzipori, that that's problematic in an animal, not problematic in a bird. The reason it's not problematic in a bird is not totally clear. Rashi writes the first case is the Ov Zimin Dehavi Hochi. There's some instances where a bird has this two intestinal tracts. Even though we don't find hachikim lehu, even though we can't find these things, we've never seen them, nevertheless, that was the halacha l'Moshe Mesinai that they had. Every bird has really two intestinal tracts, because you have the crop, then you have the gizzard, and then you're from the gizzard into the remainder of the digestive tract. So there is an intestine that runs from the crop to the gizzard, And then you have an exiting tract from the gizzard out into the digestive system. So every bird already has two sets of intestines. And since that's the case, we're going to say by birds it's not problematic because this is something that is commonly found. Whereas by animals where there's never anything like this found, we're going to say that it's a trefa. So this etzba that we said that it has to be back together as an etzba, if they exit the ebomasum, they exit the keba in the same location, that as long as it comes back by etzba, then it's okay. So that's pligi bar of ami v'ravasi. We have a machlokus between the chadamar who tahadri v'arvi. That means that the intestine came back together. The two intestines that separated, when they separated out, they come back together within an etzba worth of length. They return back to rejoining and becoming a single intestine. So that's hadri v'arvi chad. V'chadamar afagab zelo hadri v'arvi. And the other opinion is that even if they don't rejoin, then it's still considered to be okay if they exit from the same location within the abomasum in the area of a bishma l'mandamar who the one who says that they are getting back together, I know diktani had the ketzpa. That tells you how much time you have before they have to get back together. The answer is an etzpa. If they rejoin each other within an etzpa off of the keba, then it's fine. According to one who says that even though they don't get back together, these two sets of intestines, it's still okay. My ad ketzpa. Then what's the etzpa here? What's the relevance of the etzpa? The answer is ad ketzpa min lamato. Talk about the etzpa at the end of the digestive tract, the end of the rectum. They get together way, way at the end of the digestive tract by the rectum in order to expel from the same location at the rectum. And therefore, the ad etzba is not etzba from the beginning of the intestines, but rather an etzba at the end of the intestines. Yeah, I don't know. It sounds like it has to be together as it exits. The question of maybe if it got together even earlier, it would sound fine. But it seems to be, I think this might even just be a practical issue, that it has to get together before the rectum, otherwise it's going to be expelling all its waste back into its own body. So it has to reach the point. It doesn't have to join there. It has to be joined at that point. It could have joined earlier. It just has to still be joined at the point that it reaches the rectum. Okay, now we're going back to Rabbi Yehuda. We talked about it a little bit before because of the story yesterday with the Rishim Bar Chalafto. Rabbi Yehuda says, if you take off the down, the unquilled feathers on the bird, the underlayer of the bird, then it's a psula. That's like equivalent of a gluda being skin. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shmuel, Amru Davar Achad. Shita Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shmuel are singular. They're saying the same thing. Rabbi Yehuda had Amran, which we just said now. Rabbi Shmuel, that's not. We have a Mishnah in Tarot that Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Hanutza Mitztarefet. It comes to the feathers. These down feathers that are right on the body of the bird. They don't really have any hardened quills on them. They are Mitztarefet. So what's this referring to? According to Rashi, it's talking about a case of pigul. Are the notza mitzarefet? Are these feathers mitzarefet to the basar in order to get you to the thresholds that you need in order for it to be pigul? Ad kan lo kamar Rabbi Yehuda hocha. Over here, Rabbi Yehuda says that it's a problem of a treifa, a linian treifa. To lek amid de maginele, because when you peel it off, there's nothing left protecting the animal. It's like a gluda, and therefore it's a treifa. Well, then if gulei kara abundance really, but when it comes to making it to pigul, to consider it to be full class basar, that have a din of pigul, that he won't say. Vadlan lo kamar Rabbi Shmuel. Over there, Rabbi Shmuel believes that it is a din of pigul, hatamalinian flugule. But in trefa, gune lo magin. When it comes to a trefa, it's not considered protective. It has a din of basar, but it doesn't have a din of protection. It's not something that the animal can't do without, and therefore it may not have a din of trefa. So comparing the two machlokot is unfair. They are not correlated, these two machlokot. Tosfot, on the other hand, reads that Hanotza Mitztarefet, as opposed to Rashi, reads it as a din in Pigul. Tosfot says, Rabbeinu Tam Omer, Shei Mishnah B'Tarot, that this is actually a quote directly from a Mishnah in Tarot, and that it's Perish Mitztarefet L'Kabeitza D'Shomerhu. It's talking about Tumat Ochlim, that it's Mitztarefet for Tumat Ochlim. When it comes to Tumat Ochlim, a Shomer, something that's protective of the Basar, also becomes a part of the Tumat Ochlim, and it'll be counted in that threshold that you need to get to a Kabeitza, in order to have ochlim that are mitamei other items. So the feathers will be counted. That's what the inyan of mitztarefet means over here. And then the Gemara is bringing in Bahashta Maiti Raya, mitachoshiv le kishomer the basar. The fact that that Mishnah thinks that it's a shomer the basar, and therefore it's included in tumat ochlim, then alma havi kimo or. That makes it like skin. Ushinit la kilu nital or. And when you take it off, that means like it's skin coming off. Tavi gluda vetrefa, becomes a gluda and a trefa. So it also learns the issue is that it's a different case. It's a case of Tumat Ochlim. But what the case of Tumat Ochlim proves to us or shows us is how closely correlated these notza are to the basar. Are they classified like the basar? Are they a shomer the basar and therefore they become included in that package? Or are they still regarded as separate entities? Okay, here we'll start a little bit with this new Mishnah. This new Mishnah has additional items that are kshirot when it comes to the ofel. Achuzat Adam, if it has some sort of blood clot, or it was smoked, meaning that that got smoke got all over its body, v'amitzunenet, or it has some sort of choli sickness that's related to cold, v'she'achla har dufni, it ate this what seems to be poisonous food for the animal, v'she'achla tzoat tarnagolim, or it consumed the excrement of the chickens, o'she'shatat maimarim, or it drank water that was galui, water that was left open overnight. Kshira. In all these cases, then the animal is kshira. Achla sama mavet. If it ate poison. Now, sama mavet here means it doesn't poison for the animal, poison for human beings. Ushikiksha nachash. Or it was bitten by a snake. Then muteret mishum treifa. It's fine. In terms of treifa, there's no problem here. But it is asura mishum sakanat nefashot. But asura mishum sakanat nefashot, because we're worried about this poison to human beings, as well as the venom of the snake. That while it may not affect the animal and make it into a treifa, it might affect the human being who is consuming it. So Amar Shmuel, hilita chiltit. If the animal swallowed, consumed, I have here with estofita, whatever that is, then it's a treifa. My taima, because whatever this is that he's eating, this food that he's eating is very sharp. It's pointy and sharp. And it causes punctures or ruptures in the intestines. Therefore, if it's eating this type of food, then we know there's definitely a problem. Meitiv Rav Shibzi, achuzat dam. So Rav Shibzi challenged our Mishnah from this statement. So this Shmuel's statement as well as our Mishnah. Achuzat dam, when it comes to a blood clot, v'mushenet, or an animal that's smoked, v'she'achla har defuni, that it ate this oleander, v'she'achla tzoat tarnaglim, or consumed excrement of chickens, shatat maimarim, it drank water that was left exposed, hili'ita te'a, it ate crowfoot, chiltit, upilpilim, chiltit, which is that same astofita that we saw before, pilpilim and peppers, achla sama mavet, if it eats poison, and again, poison to human beings, kshira, then all of those are kshira, ikishin achash, if it was bitten by a snake, oshinashcha, kelev shota, or a rabid dog bites it, muteret mishum treifa, that's not a problem in treifa, but it's asura mishum sakanat vashot, it's a problem in terms of sakanat vashot. So now the Gemara says, kasha chiltit achiltit, the chiltit that's mentioned by Shmuel, which he said is a treifa, and versus this brighter that we just brought down from Rav Shizvi, from the Tosefta that says chiltit is ksheira. So that's a kasha. Kasha sama mavet asama mavet, you have a problem with regards to the poison. Our Mishnah says that achla sama mavet, then it's problematic. Over here, we said that if he ate some of it, there is no problem. It's kshira. Chutit al-chutit, lo kasha. So now the Gemara goes back to answer it. The steer between the statement of Shmuel and this breita. Kan be'alin. Here we're talking about the leaves. Kan be'kartin. Here we're talking about whether the kartin is drops or the stalks of this. So they have different potency in terms of the chutit. When it comes to the astafita, if you're talking about the item that is very sharp, that part which is very sharp, that'll be problematic. But if you're consuming the part of the estafita that is not so sharp, then it won't be problematic, and that'll be the distinction we draw between the two, samamavet, samamat lokasha. Regards to the human poisons, that's also not a question. Hadida, hadada. Because samamavet, as I said before, can be even interpreted, it means poison. Who it is poisonous for, it also has to be determined here. So we'll say one case is where it's only poisonous for the animal, not poisonous for a human being. And therefore, it's not a problem for the human to consume it, and that's the case of the breita. Ha-da-adam, when we're talking about our Mishnah, so that samamavet is dangerous for Adam. And that's why it will be asura to consume. Samamavet de behema, hainu hardufni. We heard that samamavet of the behema is equivalent to this hardufni. And we already have hardufni in the Mishnah. Meaning that if you're talking about poisons for animals versus poisons for man, then the poison of hardufni is already mentioned. So why would you mention hardufni behema again? So the answer to that question is trei gavnei samamavet. They're two different types of poisons, we'll call them, two different types of problems. And so the Mishnah enumerates each one of them independently. All right, we're going to stop over here, and we'll continue with this sugya tomorrow.